Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Remember me? I got the game from Big Bruce, a scum of sporty feet. I'm from New Orleans, where the goals are put you on the team. Now everybody wants that soldier slim mentality. Now every rapper wants that soldier slim mentality. Got all these youngsters with that soldier slim mentality. La Woda tripping, mixing fiction with reality. They risk it all just for that soldier slim mentality. I took a backseat to this rap shit, had some other business. I cut my hoes from ATL, I guess I burned some bridges. ATF sit by my door just like Jehovah's Witness. The thing of mine, you pushing weight like I'm at Planet Fitness. I don't exercise no more, explore another business. Invest my money in different stocks, the streets don't come with pennies. They kill my nigga BTY, for us that ain't no mental. When you come from where I come from, shit be repetition. Same condolences to the family, I pray and wish them well. Lesson one, keep it strapping, never stop it, yeah. It's a dirty gang, I hate us lurking everywhere. Can't let these niggas know you move, cause they won't play it fair. Too busy fucking with some statues, they don't even care. Fuck Robbie Lee, I never seen him on second and D. Can't ask the mail for no protection to the killing spree. Stop busting shots that come together, then buy back the block. When I die, I hope the hood still remember me. I got the game from Big Bruce, a scum of sporty teeth. I'm from New Orleans, where the goals are put you on the teeth. Now everybody wants that soldier slim mentality. Now every rapper wants that soldier slim mentality. Got all these youngsters with that soldier slim mentality. La Woda tripping, mixing fiction with reality. They risk it all just for that soldier slim mentality. Had a talk with little soldier, put him on that level. Stop hanging around a group of niggas, you're dancing with the devil. You gotta play smart, make sure your moves are calculated. They just some fans of Soldier Slim, a bunch of imitators. All the real ones, they done gone, the boys are small potatoes. Some locked in jail, relocated, the rest of soldier haters. When we was out there thugging, a nigga couldn't get a favor. But when they see you made, they fake pretend like you're their favorite. Fuck them niggas, the Dooney boys had them full of fear. Cut through, cut through, I rep that ear to ear. I'm by myself, I'm ballin' Uno like a privateer. Just cut the check and run my business like I'm pioneer. 12 o'clock, on the dot, I hustle way past midnight. Go to bed, I'm on that ridge, I'm currency like jet light. And if you double cross, might get chaotic like the real one. I hope you don't be stupid and try to touch Miss Eloise, son. when I die, I hope the hood still remember me. I got the game from Big Bruce, a scum of sporty T. I'm from New Orleans, where the goals will put you on the T. Now everybody wants that Soulja Slim mentality. Now every rapper wants that Soulja Slim mentality. Got all these youngsters with that Soulja Slim mentality. LaWonga tripping, mixing fiction with reality. They risk it all just for that Soulja Slim mentality.
Tune in to special Monday night raw edition of Off the Cuff Radio, the livest hip hop show on the web. Got my host T Max with the facts with those.
What it do, what it do, y'all. Another marvelous Monday of a main event on OTC. Shout out to our host and still on the Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. Shout out to our partners in crime, of course, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, man, Dirty Basement Radio, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique. We are live and direct, and of course, we have our super third party with us, Pittsburgh Pat, who, if he's not with us right now, he shall be joined.
Yeah, yo, what's happening?
Yo, why don't I got sponsors and shit, man? Y'all like roll off all this shit, people backing y'all. I don't got nothing, man. Nobody fucks with me, man. That's crazy. I'm just the dude from Pittsburgh. I don't got nobody. I got sponsors and shit. I ain't got no friends.
Hey, I can make the call for Percy. He can do it for you.
Nah, I'm good. I ain't trying to be one of them middle-aged Boy Scouts on that fucking stage saying, for 2 fucking hours. I'm good. I don't want to turn this episode into that shit. Yeah, I could go off right now. But what's going on with y'all, man? We got a great guest in the building.
Yeah.
He's online right now, right?
What's it all about?
Man, this dude got a new album out right now called Third Person. People familiar with, you know, you follow C-Murder, Soulja Slim, BG, and you continue to follow that genre of real New Orleans shit, real uptown shit. You know this dude for sure. None other than New Orleans Zone M11. Welcome to the show,
yep.
M11.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's down?
Man, thanks for joining us, man. Thanks for joining us. Listening to this album, man, Third Person. And, man, I'm really liking what I heard. That song we just played, Soulja Slim Mentality. I want people to actually go check out that album. At least just check out that song and really listen to what he's saying. And, man, that shit is hard, man. Any fan of Slim C, you know what I'm talking about when I say that. Like, man, this is a perfect song, man. That shit goes deep. And if you get all the references, that shit is so hard, man. So the whole album is great, don't get me wrong, but that song is super hard. But what's going on, M11?
Oh, man, I'm cool, man. I mean, it seemed like you took it, you know, you took it the way I put it out there, you know. So I put that song out pretty much be a message, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like we do this gangster shit, but at the same time, they got to know that, you know what I'm saying? All that shit, like, played out, you know what I'm saying? Like, niggas trying to get out the street. We trying to do positive things, trying to turn around, you know, this, you know, it's like a everybody doing the same thing, repetitious. Everybody following the same trend. Everybody doing the same things, but they're not catching the message. Like they don't understand that everybody you talking about that you following behind, either in jail or they dead, man. And that's real.
Yeah, that part of that song, man, like that hit hard, man, because like, you know exactly what that is. I'm glad that you talked about it because you're a perfect example. I talk about this all the time. Like, the mid-2000s in New Orleans was a crazy time because it was after the No Limit Cash Money thing, and now you had Wayne blowing up. You had Slim getting bigger. C BG, Juvie, and like Wayne would squad up and everything. And it was a time when everybody's going to blow and the city's on fire, and then tragedy just keeps hitting. You got Mac go to jail, C go to jail, Slim got killed, and all those dudes that he had with him, the cops on committee, the only one that is still alive is Menace, and Little Real One got life. Little Real One got life.
Went on the streets right now.
Well, Chaotic home too, you know. Chaotic's home, but he just came home, you know. But like that, you know. Then with C going to jail, Matt going to jail, all the people, like the movements just got started. BG ended up in jail too. Like there was so much talent, but those were all the leaders to get that talent out there. So a lot of guys didn't get the break that they needed, they deserved, and all that. So the resilience of a lot of you guys from that time, like to actually be able to break through all of that, and Katrina, of course, to break through all that to still have a good career. And I give you a lot of credit for enduring all that, but I'm sure that hurt a lot. Because when did you come into the fold with, like, starting to rap? Like, and you came in under C, right?
Nah, I'm gonna bring you back a little bit. I came in with Tough Guy. I came in with Marcello.
Marcello.
Yeah, you know, we all grew up in the project when I was, you know, like I said, I didn't come off. I was more like an intern, like, when it comes down. Like, I wasn't a rapper. You know what I'm saying? I was more of, you know, I was the person that was in the streets that was trying to get out the streets. And they, you know, they gave me an opportunity to be, you know, I didn't need to rap back then. Think about it. You just named a lot of major people. You named BG. You named Mac. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Slim. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't need to rap back. All I had to do was play my part in that circle. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And everything started happening. Like you said, I was in the middle of everything. Like, and once everything, I saw everything happen, just how you explain that timeline all the way from, it started with ICO, Dodo got killed. And Dodo got killed, then C took us under his wing with Truth. So we started with that, then C got locked up. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Matt got locked up right before C, but you know, I was to go to supporting all this stuff when we had the shows. And like I said, I seen everything, man. Like, I mean, I was there through it all. So what it made me understand is, like, man, look, I got to change the way I'm thinking. And pretty much ain't nobody else left to talk about the stuff I talk about in my music. You see what I'm saying? I was the only one left. Yeah. So I'm like, man, I need to start learning this shit and start talking about my life, because we all went through the same thing together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's why, like, I wanted to reach out to you, because I reached out to a lot of artists that were actually there, that were in the mix, and they've seen all that, and what you were talking about, how everybody want to talk about those people, like, but they weren't even around when those people were around, and it's like, really understand what you're talking about, you know what I'm saying? Like, I that's what I felt like from your record. Like, I felt like you were saying, like, yeah, thanks for paying the homage to it, but understand what happened. And you know what I'm saying? Like, understand, like, everybody's gone. Something tragic happened to everybody. So, like, it's time to, like, what do we do to stay away from that type of shit? You know what I mean? Like, how do you move on? And there's a few artists like that I've had on the show that were, you know, trying to get on back then. And they were around all of that, and they seen all of that, and
yeah,
they had to change the way they move. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to do things differently. Like, you got to learn. See, like I see a lot of the young generation, they kind of miss some of the clues that we was giving to them. Like, it's right there in their face. Like, you seen what happened to everybody that you looked up to. You know what I'm saying? So you got to move different. Like, you got to do the opposite. Don't do the same thing that they did and end up, you know, it's going to be the same outcome. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no other way to slice it, man. Like, I love hearing the references. I think it's cool when the Young Bucks, you know, make the soldier references and shit like that. I think it's cool that they know the history, because I mean, a lot of places don't have that. And you guys meant so much, you know, this people meant so much to the city. I don't think that they'll ever not have the legacy. You know, we've seen other people's legacies trying to get pushed to the back now with the young crowd. They don't really, Urban New Orleans don't do that, you know. Slim, C, BG, like the Hot Boys, like, that shit's embedded in New Orleans culture for good. But,
That's all we had. This the whole thing. Like, the only thing we had to look up to back then was drug dealers. You know what I'm saying? That was, like, that was the biggest thing going on in New Orleans. Like, if you was somebody that was making money in the street, that's what people looked up to. You know what I'm saying? And we didn't have nothing that was, like, on a positive note. We didn't see, you know, like, we watched things on TV, and we actually seen your culture. You already seen your people on TV. You know what I'm saying? Made it out to us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that kind of gave us a lot of inspiration. Like, damn, we can do it too. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, like I said, it just, you know, like I said, I mean, people don't like to talk about it, but it just was like, we didn't get that support from, you know, like from the certain cliques of people. Like, meaning that the city, our hood supported us, you know what I'm saying? But you got the other folks, you got the police, you got the... You know what I'm saying? They was on our back hard. You know what I'm saying? They gave us a hard time in Louisiana, man. Like, they gave us a real hard time. Black, we was black entrepreneurs making money. You know what I'm saying? We had cars that, you know, they couldn't afford. And they pretty much made our life visible, man. Like, they made it, you know, when they talk about the hip-hop police, I believe that shit. Because they cracked down hard on everybody that was actually part of that movement.
Oh, yeah, you can see it, man.
I'm gonna shoot this to you. Now, do you feel like with part of the industry, do you think they were kind of afraid to embrace Wallace movement at a time? Because they look at y'all pedigree and they be like, oh, these guys are really about it. It goes beyond just talking about on just record. They really about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, man, but I tell people about that. Like, I talk about, like, how people perceive New Orleans differently than how they looked at us in the beginning. Like, in the beginning, it was filth. I ain't gonna lie to you. It was really filth. You know what I'm saying? And, like I said, people already, they already gave you that. They already judge you like that. Like, if you say, man, I'm from New Orleans, are you doing this? They automatically give you, oh, man, he got to be a killer. He got to be this. So they automatically... had judged you already. You know what I'm saying? Like, they already had, man, well, man, we couldn't fuck with certain people. Certain people didn't even mess with us because they felt, you know what I'm saying, we don't want this type, you don't want this type around us. They're going to get in trouble. They're going to do this. And it wasn't like that, man. We just really wanted to get out the hood, man.
One thing about it, Mac-11, number one, it's great to have you with us with the full clip of conscious wisdom that you're giving in terms of how you're letting all. Definitely the pedigree of, like, what King of Pat said, New Orleans has always been branded as its own world in terms of, you know, all the, and I mean, just not only New Orleans, but all of Louisiana, all the way from Harvey to, you know, Lafayette, you know, of course, you know, Baton Rouge. I mean, you all really, really, really made an impact on the game at large. You know, we talked about tough guys in entertainment, you know, of course, with Marcello and Currency, his younger brother. What was it like to be starting with them and just watching them grow, and how did that influence you in terms of your movement as you really, really began to really, like, you know, get serious about it?
I mean, you know, at one time we all was together. Like, we was all one clique. Like, we was all together. Currency, I could pick Currency up, bring him to the studio all the time. I was that person that was pretty much like, man, you don't got to, you know, you ain't about to get in these streets, or you ain't about to do this. I'm going to come pick you up. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to bring him to the studio. Fellow, he just, you know, at the time, he was ahead of his time already as for the rap and shit.
Right.
So he was,
right,
he was on a whole different level when it came down to that. Like, you know, he was more New Yorkish. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was more New Yorkish.
Yeah.
Type of, you know, I mean, and it's, you know, I looked up to that. Like, so I was always like, man, you know, like, I never be
great.
Like you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you something, you something.
That
different.
Was great. Like, I would say the two people that don't get enough credit are Marcello and Six Shot. Don't get enough credit for how dope they are and how early they were that dope. They don't get credit for that.
It was ahead of their time. It was ahead of their time, man. And, you know, back then, like I said, back then it was like you couldn't just, you know what I'm saying? You had to go through a certain... You got to go to certain levels, you know what I'm saying? Like to even be a rapper, like I had to go through stages. Like I had to be our intern. Like I had to sit down, like when Marcello Currency in the studio write, I'll write with them. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I got better with my penmanship with writing, because I just hit the studio all day and I just watch them. You know, CG come through, he do a verse. You know what I'm saying? I'm just watching them, but every beat they put on, I used to write to them. Then I'd go back and I'd spit it to him. You know, I'd spit it to Fellow, like, man, listen to this. You know, and he'd be like, all right, you know. Until one day he just gave me a chance, like, man, get on that bitch. You know what I'm saying? Like, get on that bitch. You know what I'm saying?
Cool.
So that was my break. Like, that was like, damn, that gave me the confidence to be like, damn, like, if Fellow fucking with it, then I, you know what I'm saying? I got it, like, motivated to keep going.
And I mean, man, it's just the talent y'all have, and it's not just limited to rapping. I mean, when you think about some of the ballers that came through there, of course, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, you know, formerly Chris Jackson. I mean, when you look at Randy Livingston, Ronnie Henderson, Odell Beckham, Super Bowl champion. I mean, what is it about New Orleans that just brings that heart, that hustle, that drive, that determination? I mean, what? How did New Orleans really groom you to survive in the industry at large?
I mean, it's pretty much like, you know, it turns into a hunger, you know what I'm saying? Because you growing up, I mean, pretty much you growing up around a bunch of people that don't have anything. Like, we didn't have, you know, you know, you talking about the Magnolia Project all the way to the Calio. It was poverty. Like, it was really poverty stricken, you know what I'm saying? But we saw good in that, and we lived in that, you know what I'm saying? And we still celebrated. We still had fun, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you can get past that, you can go anywhere and survive. And they all, you know, you can survive in New Orleans. You can survive anywhere on the earth. And that's what gave, you know, that it's just a different motivation to give you, because your goal is to get out that environment. Like, I want to change my environment, and this is the way I'm going to do it. So you just go extra, extra harder, you know what I'm saying, to try to make that happen.
When you look at the game right now, Mac 11, in terms of where a lot of rappers, because one thing about it is you've lived the real life, so you understand the royalty that comes with it, but also the inherent dangers of it. And, you know, one thing about it is you keep echoing the sentiment of, which is accurate and so sincere, about I lived a rough life, but I'm trying to make it out of there to have a real successful and peaceful life. What is your opinion today about a lot of rappers who seemingly are engaging and embracing the criminal lifestyle and even just jumping into it when they don't have to, but not understanding how dangerous it really is?
I mean, pretty much they misconstrued and shit. Like, they taking it the wrong way. Like, I don't know, you know, you're not, some things you got to comprehend. They comprehend, you know, the whole thing the wrong way. Because talk about it. Like, we love our hood. Like, we love our hood. And that's what made us. You know what I'm saying? Like, that you know, that made us the people we are today. You know what I'm saying? Meaning that I can go anywhere, go into a room and, you know what I'm saying, and stand out, like, without, you know, just conversation-wise, you know what I'm saying? Somebody going to say something. Somebody going to be like, man, you're not from here. Where you from? You know what I'm saying? And they took the wrong element. And even though, like, they took the killing part of it, like, they took that part, like, yeah, we hate busters, we do this. but they didn't take the swag. They didn't take the lingo. You know what I'm saying? They didn't understand that that's what make us stand out, not the killing part. You feel me?
Right.
Definitely, man. Like, Mac had this quote when he got out of prison. And I think it fits what we talk about. I'm going to mess the quote up. But so much he said, like, I'm a soldier. That's what a soldier is. He faces whatever obstacles in front of him. But, like, but we're talking about how people want to talk about the soldier lifestyle. They're, how you say, they misunderstand it. One part, the most important part about being a soldier is the part where you overcome it. Whatever obstacles in front of you. And that's the part that they're missing. That's the part that makes you a soldier, is overcoming the obstacle, not staying in the obstacle, not letting it get you. The overcoming is what made you a soldier. That's where to be able to talk about it, to be able to say I lived it, that's the part of the most important part of it. Like, Mac did 20-something years, 21 summers, and I believe he was innocent, but that, look how Mac handled that. Look how Mac came out of that. Look at him now. Like, whether he was guilty or not, like, he don't cry about it. Like, he maintains his innocence, but he overcame it. He saw that shit through. And for a lot of people, it's just always the weak Mac would come home, but at the same time, we know this how, you know, like, we've seen how they did see murder. Like, Louisiana has a notorious history of just a terrible judicial system. So, of course, we believe Mac will come home. We believe Steve will come home. But, like, we always don't know what they're about down there, too. And whether you did or didn't do something, like, really kind of don't matter to them, you know. And that's the hard part. But I think what Mac said when he came home, wish I had the quote in front of me because I was going to use this for another episode, but it, you know, he said, like, I'm a soldier. A soldier takes whatever obstacle comes to him and overcomes it. That's the part about being a soldier. That's why we look at Mac right now and we're like, man, that's a soldier like that. Like, no one will ever take that from him. Like,
you got to salute him for that. Yeah, you got to salute him for that because, like I said, you know, all those are personal friends of mine. And, if I give you, I'm going to give you another fact, but give you another, me, BG, Mac, and Fiend, we all went to the same elementary school. And Slim too. Slim was, me, Slim, Mac, BG, and Fiend, all of us in the same classroom. You know, it's like, he, you know what I'm saying? We actually came up together. Like,
the poor teacher.
Yeah, we know each other.
That would have been, that classroom was lit.
Full of talent,
poor
man.
Fucking teachers, man.
It was full of talent, man. We was, they always talk about me because I was the only one that, you know, I was the one that was always on a do not admit list because I always, always got into stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, that's something crazy that I cherish, man. Like, and Mac, I'm going to tell you something. Mac, every time I talk to him, he always dropping some type of knowledge. And we were talking about something, you know, we were talking about how the situation was. He came home. And he was mainly like, you know, I felt like, man, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? And he was like, man, I'm going to tell you this. He said, I don't have a problem with any person using me, long as they don't misuse it. Look, think about it. You know what I'm saying? I thought about it. Like, it's no problem. You can use me. Like, use me, but don't misuse me. And that made sense, man. So, like, he always tried to do it. Yeah, that's deep. So,
when did you start messing with C? Like, when your career, like, when you was in your career, so, like, when did you start fucking with C? I'm sure. Was that, like, around the time that he came home on the appeal with, like, was it the Screaming for Vengeance era, see?
Yeah, yeah. So what happened was, like I said, we didn't get a chance for the, you know, I ain't gonna lie to you. I wasn't even that hard in rap when he went to jail, before he went to jail. I was more, you know, like I told you, I was running with Tough Guy. And pretty much when he took us under, you know what I'm saying, it was like, it wasn't that long. Like, it was temporary because he went to jail, like, within that year. You know what I'm saying? So all these years passed, you know what I'm saying? I'm doing my thing with Cello. And, you know, Cello had his own label. I ended up getting locked up. I got locked up in 2002. Came home in 2003, right before Slim got killed. And it was like, you know what I'm saying? It was like, you know, like you say, it's just things back to back. It was back to back trauma, man. Like, you know, some people would have cracked under that type of pressure. And it's like, I kept going. You know what I'm saying? So when Katrina happened, you know, I moved to Texas. I'm still in Texas right now. And it's you know, I know Louisiana politics, so they locked me up pretty much for nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't trying to get caught up in that same element again. So I stayed in Texas. I got with a label out here, and I was doing my thing with that. So the whole time I'm just critiquing, you know, I'm just handling my business, learning how to do things, how to be in the studio, you know, doing everything the right way. And C came home. So when he came home on the appeal, you know what I'm saying, my little partner, Cornell, that's pretty much who, you know, he pretty much did the thing with the logo and everything. Like, he made the, you know, he the one that, he made the shirts, he do everything with TRU.
Oh, okay.
And he recommended, you know, he was like, man, see, you know, see, looking for some people to be on the label. So I'm like, man, that's my people from, you know, I've been knowing them from the No Limit shit back in the days, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, man, just tell C I want to holler. And let me tell you the way C did it, man. C had like a, it's funny, he had like a, like, he had like something for us to do. Like, he gave all of us a track, the same track. He gave everybody the same track, and he was like, spit on it. You know what I'm saying? So we had to go to the studio, do our thing, send it to him, and he reviewed it. So when he reviewed my song, he was like, I'm fucking with it. You know what I'm saying? Welcome. Next thing you know, I was driving back to New Orleans to work on the album with him. And that's where it happened at, man. He recorded the album in his house, you know what I'm saying? So
I was actually locked up when that happened. And like, I remember just like, we had like the little radio head joints, the Sony ones to pick up the radio, and I'm in Pittsburgh, so on the weekends we would get Clinton Sparks Smash Time Radio, and that was our only time that we would like really hear like hard shit, like not singles and shit. Like, we heard like, you know, like a little more underground type shit, maybe mixtape joints that, you know, it was just Clinton Sparks like spinning some shit that he liked, you know what I'm saying? And that's where I heard see like his first shit off of Screaming for Vengeance. He had that post on the block, and he had like the remix with Papoose and Crazy Bone. And I remember like, he had this bar like, it's something on the block, his parents wore it up. I'm off this house arrest. When I'm off this house arrest, I can't remember how the bar went, but that shit like, man, had me going crazy in myself. Shit, I love that joint. But Double XL ended up doing like a, like they wrote up, I think it was Double XL, they did a little write up of him, kind of explaining it, his situation, and they listed off everybody that he was fucking with. So like, I always kept that in my mind. I'm like, man, you know, I'm Slim, BG, C Murder, Die Hard. You know, I fuck with myself. I fuck the whole New Orleans. Like, I love New Orleans. LOG, UNLV. Like, I love the entire culture of New Orleans. They're everybody. Every little style, like, I fuck with it. So like, that's all I do is try to find more dope shit. So I kept everybody, you know, not even knowing what they did or anything. Like Verse, Jay Lyric, G De Niro, you know what I mean? I just like remembered all these names. Verse, and I just remembered all of them. And I wrote them joints down and everything, man. Just so when I came home, I had the shit to check out. Got that screen for Venice album. And I just, you know, Kelly O'Click came out, that Tomorrow joint came out, and I just kept following everybody that I heard repping that true shit. And man, it's a dope collective of artists, you know what I'm saying? When I heard your Exposed album, that's when I'm like, yeah, I gotta kind of hear everything this dude ever touched. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
When I heard that, I actually, dissected though every song. I digested everything you were saying. And I'm like, man, this dude's ill. Like, not just another New Orleans dude. Like, he's not just another face in the crowd. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this dude's a little different. And, well, man, you know, I reached out to you a long time ago for the interview and said, you just hit me up.
Oh, did
you? I hit you up a while ago, but I was on a different show before, too. So I ended up walking away from doing interviews for a few years, and I came back with E. Yeah, I hit you up, and you saw the DM the one day. Like, yo, like, I'm down. Nice. Like, I haven't really been able to get anybody from the crew. And,
I'm
glad it happened, man. But look, I'm gonna ask you. We're gonna have some fun real quick. I'm 11. I ask all New Orleans artists this because I'm a diehard New Orleans fan. I got a couple New Orleans type questions to ask. Now you can take this first one. You can take this first one any way you want it. It can be four nicest, the four like most impactful, most influential, however you want to take the question, do it. Who's your New Orleans Mount Rushmore? And so your top
New Orleans Mount
Rushmore?
Damn.
Yeah.
Ooh. the way I look at it, because by me coming up like in the beginning of that shit, so it's like I might look at people a little differently, and I say this so much to where, you know, I got to keep it real myself. Like, everybody know, everybody you talk to, it's like a no-brainer, right? It's going to be like Soulja Slim, BG, you know what I'm saying? For me, I'm just a little, I'm a little deeper on it, so I'm more like Sporty T was a big influence on me, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, like, I grew up under him, so nobody really, you know, they never really listened to his music back then. Like, you know what I'm saying? Back then, he was one of the dogs. Like, he was one of the niggas that was spitting back then. And that's a person I came up under. So I paid attention to everything, you know what I'm saying, that was coming out. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to really do that when we talk about New Orleans because we have so many talented rappers.
It's hard to pick four.
Like, we need a big amount here.
Yeah, you do because
because
you're four nicest. Like, you know, you could list four of your nicest MCs from New Orleans, and I could list my four. They could be totally different, but we'd both be right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
There's a lot of nice, you know what I mean? It just depends on, like, who rocked with heavier kind.
I tell people that so much, man, because, you know, it's like, it's so much, like, we had so many eras of talent that came through. Like, and there's a lot of people, like, UNLV is, like, just by themselves because they pretty much started everything. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
they have something to do with my next question.
Yeah, man, UNLV was real influential. I'm going to tell you why, because if Lil Yachty, you know, I tell Lil Yachty this all the time, but I was like, dog, we had a little clique. I ain't going to call it a game, but we had a little clique where we used to run, and we call it UNLV. And what we used to do, we used to wear the UNLV hat, you know what I'm saying? So we used to wear the Las Vegas, you know, wear that, you know, the red hat. With the you know, with the jerseys,
this was probably around the time they won the championship. It was hot for a while.
Know,
like,
yeah, Larry
Johnson, squad
all that
for a
shit,
while.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like at the time we was, you know, we used to go to these parties. Like, any party we went to, we try to went about 20 deep. You know what I'm saying? And we represented. Like, we're being that uptown niggas living violent. Like, that's what we're doing at party. You know what I'm saying? Like, any party we went to, the dance we went to, we represent that. So UNLV was a real major influence on, you know, on my culture, you know, that's coming up. You know what I'm saying? Then you had a next culture, you know what I'm saying? So
Well, I like, think I guess,
Go ahead. Now,
I was going to say about them, like, I was going to ask you, like, who do you think should, like, you know, name a few artists who you think early on kind of set the tone for what New Orleans would become. And I would say what Slim and Six Shot did on, like, that Hype Enough compilation, what they were doing back then, like, with KLC. And then with UNLV, they like, if you take those, you know, like the Mac Miller Kellyo album, Sixth and Barone, Uptown for Life, like the Mac Miller Kellyo, like, which is, they just put out this week, it's on all streaming platforms now, finally. But that album and what, like, Slim and Six Shot were talking about, that, like, set the tone for, that, like, let everybody know, like, the culture down there, like, what was going on down there, the language, the style, the sound, you know, like, the slang terms, like, the term, like, that laid, like, the, that, like, had such an impact that, like, laid the blueprint down for what New Orleans became, because it shifted from the bounce era, which, you know what I mean, like, into, like, the more of the NC, but at the same time, still had the elements of bounce in it, but it also had the gangster influence, and, you know, like, just to lay down what, how you guys talked, how you guys dressed, everything, how you rapped, you know, like, what, you know, the style of rapping and all that shit. Like, Lil Wayne said, people always say, like, man, he must have had writers because he's so different on the cover shit. He's like, nah, man, like, the whole birth of Mixtape Wayne came because of Baby not wanting him to rap. He wanted him to New Orleans rap. He didn't like the way that Wayne was trying to rap, like, differently. Like, when he came out this week, he said, you know, UGK, Goody Mob, Missy Elliott, Jay-Z are his favorite rappers, and that's how he was trying to rap when he was young, and Baby wouldn't let him. So he started making this shit as, like, a hobby kind of. So he always had a little bit of that in him, and, you know, he got older. You know, and he said he got better at it, and that's how it looks so different, as if he was aiming to do different shit. And I think LOG played a big part in setting the tone as well, coming from downtown, and he was talking that soldier shit, the Bally, the Reebok, the Bells, in terms like Hot Boys. You know, like, I think he played a big part. And maybe not nationally, but in New Orleans, he was the one guy that wasn't with Cash Money or No Limit, that just kind of had his own movement, made his own huge impact. He's a legend in his own right, you know what I mean? Just for what he was able to accomplish in New Orleans. But, so I give him that nod as well. Like, that Mac Miller Kellyo album, and then the way Slim and Six Shot were rapping on that Hype Enough shit, I think those are, like, the biggest groundbreaking type of album and music that, if you're a fan of, you know, Soulja Slim, BG, C-Murder, you know, Mac, like, you know, the two top of City Cut to a Committee style of rap, that was the blueprint. Like, all those elements that are in the music we like today come from that, what they did back then. You know what I'm saying?
We had so much to choose from, man. Like, you know, you got to understand, we had a variety of music that was coming out, pumping out around that time. So you got to think about it. We had
Jubilee, Take Flow Records.
We had Mystical. We had Fiend. Fiend, the baddest motherfucker alive. That was his first fucking sync with Big Boy. And we had so many. We had so many people that were pumping albums out. You got to think about another person with when you say LOG. So I listened to LOG and I listened to Low Key. Now Low Key was another. Another artist that don't get his flowers because he was on some other, you know, he was on some other rap. Mm-hmm. Like he was different.
Like some hardcore,
you know,
type shit, kinda. That Gangsta Booty Funk album, that shit is groundbreaking as well.
And that's when me and Slim ran together around that time. So around that time, man, Slims would be around me. And I used to bring him to a lot of the shows and stuff he used to do. And, you know, that's what introduced him to Lil Key. You know, that's when he did the Weed Fiends, Dope Fiends, Coke Fiends.
Weed Fiends, yeah. Yep.
And that's, I mean, like I said, that was like some, you know, that's what put me on Lil Key, you know what I'm saying? And Slim was just, like I said, he was just loved by a lot, by everybody, man, just by his attitude and the way his you know, the way he carried himself. But pretty much all of, you know, was like in the same, like everything you hear in the music, it comes from just regular fucking people. It comes from neighborhood. Like that was regular people in our neighborhood. That's why you hear people say that, you know, you might hear that controversy of people talk about it, about Hot Boys and how it originated. Yeah, we know how it originated because I was back there. You know, I was around in the project and everything when all that was going on. But it became a lingo for everybody. Like, everybody got that title. You know what I'm saying? If you was doing these certain things that was in the street. So that's the first thing that popped in your head, man. That's a Hot Boy. You know what I'm saying? He out here doing this. He making money. He doing that. You're a Hot Boy, automatic. So that's a name that was kind of universal. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody couldn't just claim that name and be like, except the people that originated. You know what I'm saying? That was street dudes. You know, that was street dudes doing that. You feel me? But any rapper, no rapper can claim that name and say, oh, that's for me. Because that was for the hood. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a name that was for the hood.
L-O-G used it. Yeah, L-O-G used it.
Yeah.
You know, we know the Hot Boys used it. Like, several people have used it, you know what I mean? Like, it did grow into something else. It went into, like, it just like a term, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Nobody could just say, I'm, you know, like, I'm,
yeah,
so, like, you know,
right there.
I'm the Hot Boy. Like,
copyright. I mean, they probably copyrighted now, but, you know, back then, that was just a lingo. And like I said, everything that they, you know, everything that you see in the music is, you know, and that's what I tell people. When people talk about music and they talk down on gangster music, I try to put it in perspective for them to understand that we not influencing nobody. We just talking about what the fuck's going on in the neighborhood. Like, all we doing is just replaying everything that already happened, that we already
saw. You know
what I'm saying? You pretty much got your mind made up anyway. By that
that's
time.
Real 11.
You see what I'm saying?
You know, that's real 11 because, you know, a lot of times people want to, the thing is everybody tries to act like, you know, the gangster rap is the cause when it's really an effect and a messaging of the ills that have already been plaguing American society in general and black people specifically since the beginning. You know, and this is something that a lot of times there's always been an issue about where this country, in terms of the freedoms we enjoy, you know, which I will say is the greatest in the world because we have the freedoms we have, but that doesn't mean that we are exempt from equality, from non-equality, because we are not equal in this country. We have seen the situations that have shown that black people and people of color have been treated on secondhand status, ignored, ostracized, executed, and anything else. So for us to have a voice is pertinent, and this is something that the ugly reality of the situation some of us come from, just because it's ugly doesn't make it less important. Just because it's going to hurt people's feelings doesn't mean it needs to be ignored. And it is something that is imperative and priority that it has to be spoken on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that.
Before we let you go, though, I need your top five most underrated New Orleans of all time, too. I need that.
The most underrated?
Most underrated.
I mean, you pretty much you said a lot when you said Six Shot. Cause Six Shot, I mean, he really talented, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, just to add a little icing on it, I can add myself. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, it's like most people that know me, you know what I'm saying, they know me from, you know, doing things in the streets and shit. So they never did, you know. Only I could say I just say you like 40% embrace me as a rapper, you know what I'm saying? And the rest is like, right, man. You know what I'm saying? But you gotta really rap too. Yeah, you gotta really listen to what I'm talking about. When you listen to me, then you'll be like, you know, anybody that heard that album, Third Person, you know what I'm saying? They pretty much understand. Like, you know, they take me more serious, you know what I'm saying, compared to, but people just look at it like this. Like, you see, everybody I've been around was always a high status person, you know what I'm saying? So from Slim was a person that stands out. If I'm around BG gonna stand up. If I'm fucking with C gonna stand up. If I'm around Mac gonna stand up. You see what I'm saying? So I'm never gonna be able to, you know, overshadow these people because everybody I hang around is fucking amazing. You feel what I'm saying?
What's dope about you guys is that y'all also respect the craftsmanship of lyricism, because, you know, when people really listen to the layers beyond the bounce, you gotta also be spitting, like literally spitting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. When I listened to your last album, that album, you have this joint on there, man. It might be the bona fide hustler joint.
Then
the joint with Dougie Fresh on it. When I heard them joints, it just, like, I don't know, man. Like, something just clicked, and I started them over, re-listened to them, and then I just kept going and going on the album. I'm like, man, like, I didn't really realize how dope you really were until, like, I started actually, like, maybe I just biasly rocked with you because of who you were affiliated with, you know what I mean? Because I love Slim and C. You know what I mean? So, like, of course I fuck with you, you know what I mean? But when I actually sat and listened to it, I'm like, oh, like, that's why they fucking on these hard. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I listened, like, to the whole album in detail, I'm like, man, this dude, what's up? I want to shout out my boy, Corey Wisco, on Facebook. He's probably tagged you a million times on Facebook because he's a big fan of yours. And Brunda, he just posted a link of yours, and it just hit me at the right time. Like, I heard the drum, I'm like, damn, he's hard. So that's when I went back and started listening to even more. And then once this album dropped, I was like, yeah, man, I really wanted to get you on because I want to at least do our part to put this album for our audience to see, hoping they check it out, because I feel that if you just like hip-hop, if you just like lyricism, it fits that. If you're a fan of Slim and C Murder, it's that kind of music. It, you know, it has a little bit for everybody, but it's a hard album. It's not lazy at all. You put a lot into every single joint on this album. The Letter to C Murder, that's been out for a little bit, but I'm glad you put that on there, man, because, you know, there's not a big enough C Murder movement in the hip-hop community. And,
right.
That's a shame, you know what I mean? Because that's a major injustice, especially when people do go to support them and people publicly discourage them from doing that. I think that's a little crazy. But so I do salute you for always holding C down, holding Slim down. And, you know, there's a lot of people that show fake love, you know what I'm saying? You were there for both of them. You're qualified to hold them down, and you do a great job of that, and keeping that music that we, you know, just as fans, we lost a lot too, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
I'm gonna give you something right now what people a lot of people didn't see, you know what I'm saying? The reason why I didn't get the exposure I needed to get, because you didn't get the backstory on it, right? So you couldn't get it because, you know, we no longer had that machine behind us. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I came in the middle when when C got locked back up. So when we had the machine moving, you know what I'm saying? We was about to go with it. We came with the movement. We came with the DVD. And we was about to go real hard. We had a little deal with Asylum, you know what I'm saying? So we was about to go hard in the paint with it. And all that just disappeared, man, when she got locked back up. You know what I'm saying? So that kinda took my time away. Like I didn't get a chance to get that machine, that No Limit machine that, you know, that everybody had. You know what I'm saying? So I also say that about G.I. Peaches, and I say that about Lil Slim. You know what I'm saying? They don't have that machine behind them. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reason why, you know, they don't get everything they need to get out of it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, enough people don't know about it because they don't have that machine behind them. So we doing this shit independent. So we doing everything we can do strictly just off of social media. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Yeah, look, man, I thank you very much for your time, man. My co-host, they got another interview scheduled here at the top of the hour, and you gave us a nice, solid hour, great interview. You're welcome back anytime, man. I mean that. And anytime you got any music, man, just hit me up. I got my own show called Soldier Sundays, and it's for that purpose. For, you know, we got like 56,000-57,000 subscribers on our YouTube. So, you know, I'm the New Orleans head of the team. So, I'm using that show to do my part to use our platform to, you know, give you guys the opportunity to share the platform. You know what I mean? Put your music and make it, you know, just gives one more place for other people that might see it. You know what I mean? So, anytime you got something, you need me to shout it out, put it on the air, play something, you want to come back on for to promote something, just hit me up, man. You're always welcome back. I'm going to give you the floor. I want you to tell the listeners where to find you on social media, where to find the album, or anything else you got coming out, things to be on the lookout for. So the floor is yours, M11. I thank you so much for coming on, and go ahead and close us out, man.
Appreciate it, man. I'm going to get a shout out to you, you know what I'm saying, Off the Cuff Radio. And, you know, pretty much just how I go, man. I'm M11, you know what I'm saying? I got my social media is true M11, true_M11. Holler at me. Third person is ready. Click my bio. Check it out. You know what I'm saying? You won't be disappointed. I definitely have, like, two more projects I'm going to put out. You know what I'm saying? I got to start shooting these visuals. And right now, it's just, you know, just in grind mode right now. So, like I said, I appreciate even, you know, you giving me the platform to even speak. You know, we got to do this in segments, you know what I'm saying? Because I got stories.
I'd love to have you back on, man.
For years.
Yeah. I'd love to have you back. We had to do Dirt Dire on from the ninth floor. And me and him had a great interview. I had to bring him on for a part two because we didn't even get to scratch the surface. And I feel that me and you have a lot more to talk about as well. So
That's why I'd
love to have a part two
if
you're here in the near future, man.
Yeah, I gave you the intro, man. So just so you know what I'm saying, what history, where I come from. I tell people that. Like people, you know, like you probably heard in my song, I said I don't want to get the title of an OG. You know what I'm saying? But I will call myself an OG. In this rap shit, you feel me? Because I was there since the beginning, you know what I'm saying? So everything you see and every legacy you see on that TV screen, back at, I was somewhere out there. You know what I'm saying? So always know that, you know what I'm saying? If you see something, man.
Marcello, Cutthroat, you know, I mean, you could trace you, even you're affiliated, like, with Marcello and Currency, you know, that's Jet Life, and he murders for No Limit and Slim, you know what I mean? You make your imprint on the whole culture of New Orleans, man. Your footprint is definitely there, man. And I'd love to have you back on and keep talking about it, man.
All good, man.
All right, man. You stay safe. And I'll be in touch, man. We want a part two, so we'll make that happen this summer sometime, man.
All right, man. Be good. Appreciate it.
Definitely, man. Thanks, thank you again so much,
everybody.
Man. Thank you.
Man, thank y'all, man.
All right.
Always, man. Here we go. I'm 11. Great guest. Thanks, y'all, for letting me
bring him on the show, man. I feel he's a great guy. I'd love to have him on for a part two, man, because we got a lot of stuff we didn't touch on, you know. But, man, I appreciate it, yo. I appreciate it.
Definitely, Pat, always, man. You know we always got your back, man, as we know you got ours, man. You know it's love, man. Thank you.
Of course, man. It's a PC murder. Rest in peace for the swim. And I'll see you, talk to you guys again on Friday. G's Queen Legend. Granddaddy IU.
Yep.
So, Pat, I'm gone. I thank you guys.
Peace. Peace, Pat.
Always, man. So, yeah, man, we on hour number two. We about to go on a little music intermission. And when we come back, we're going to have our second guest on the line. Let's go.
Let's get it.
The one I can't get over. Yeah, you the one, baby, won't you come over? Baby, pulling off my way. I wanna be the one to make you stay. Yeah, you the one for me. You the one, you the one, you the one, baby. Yeah, you the one, baby. You the one, you the one, you the one for me. Yeah, you the one. When it's all done, you the only nigga that I want. Feelings get involved. You already know that you the only one that turn me on. Babe, I love the way you rub my body. Always been the type to hold me down, you got me. Why you gotta treat me so damn good, man? Laying eyes up, I'm calling out your full name. You been the one on my mind, rolling with me day and night. Whenever I need you around, you be right there by my side. You ain't first I dealt with, but first I love with. Buy me things for nothing, you the one that I'm cuffing, yeah. Yeah, you the one I can't get over. Yeah, you the one, baby, won't you come over? Baby, pull up my way. I wanna be the one to make you stay. Yeah, you the one for me. You the one, you the one, you the one, baby. Yeah, you the one, baby. You the one, you the one, you the one for me. I never had nobody like you. You really special all the times we spent together. I just know this love not regular. Never met nobody like you. Nobody measures to the things that you do for me. From the gift up to the pleasure. I know you feel the same. It ain't no games for me. If I'm a ride, I'm on your team. It ain't no change for me. You the one that I want. I know I can change your life. That's the feeling I'm willing to ride. I'm feeling your vibe. You gripping my thigh. And loving this feeling will be like an odd. Yeah, you the one I can't get over. Yeah, you the one, baby, won't you come over? Baby, pull up my way. I wanna be the one to make you stay.
Already, man, we back live and direct on hour number two of Off the Cuff Radio, part of this doubleheader. That joint was fire, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. Man, look, our second guest tonight, this talented young lady is definitely lives up to her namesake of being one of the precious in terms of what people are sought after. First off, we got to give a shout-out, of course, to Derek SCPT and, of course, Day One, and, of course, RL Visual and RL Entertainment. Yes, absolutely. This young lady right here is definitely the whirlwind of a Wonder Woman from the one, the only Watts, of course, Home, of course, J-Rock, of course, Cam, of course, you know what I'm saying? I mean, so many other luminaries. I mean, we can't forget Glasses Malone, the general, and she's here carrying on the tremendous tradition with her incredible talent, her tremendous train of thought, her undeniable unique. Ladies and gentlemen, West Coast, for throwing up them dubs, it's the incredible Ivory, y'all. What it do? What it do, boo? How you?
What's up, y'all? How y'all doing?
What's going on with you? Glad to have you with
us. We know. We gotta pull a drink, Chance. We gotta make some noise. Noise, damn it.
Y'all crazy. Yeah, what's going on, y'all? How y'all doing? I'm doing good. You feel me? Just chilling right now.
Yeah, you got the fire single out there. We just played that on there on the just now before you got on. Tell us about any of the projects that you have on the works for your bass that's coming check for.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have some stuff out on all platforms right now, YouTube, SoundCloud, you know, then we go into, like, the more mainstream stuff like Apple, Google, Pandora, iTunes, you know, I'm kind of like any platform you can think of, iHeartRadio, all that, you know, I'm on all those platforms as well. So you guys can definitely tune in to any music that I have out at Ivory the Goddess. You can type that in, it should pop up. And I definitely got some other stuff coming out. I got some new music, some features, some music videos, some sponsorships, you know, some collabs. So a lot is coming together. You know, I just got to be patient with me. It's coming, though. I know a lot of people have been asking me when I'm putting out some new music and stuff. So it's definitely coming. I already got over 20 songs already, you know, done, mixed and recorded. It's just all about putting it out now. So, yeah.
One thing about it,
strategically putting the right records out at the right time. And, like, sometimes you might want to put them for
ease. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't like rushing stuff. I'm the person, like, just recently, too, which is crazy, like, last week, you know, I had a music video planned, and I was on the phone with my manager, and he was basically like, you know, all right, we're going to do this, that, and this tomorrow. And I was like, you know what? We just gonna have to cancel the whole music video. And if the music video was the next day, I was like, just cancel all of it. He's like, cancel all of it? I'm like, yeah, I don't like rushing stuff. I don't like when stuff is organized or unplanned. I'm like a perfectionist when it comes to music. So I'm like, yeah, just cancel the whole shoot. We gotta. I don't like how it's sounding. So I'm definitely like, when it comes to music, I don't rush nothing. I always put it out when it feel right, or, you know, I'm more of a mental person. I go by how I feel. So, yeah, we have to push the video shoot back.
I mean, one thing about it is that it is a very meticulous process in terms of being the creative spirit in anything that you do, and it's important to make sure that everything is aligned properly for the execution and the presentation. I guess we got to take it back to the genesis of your genius. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you got into this game. Who were your inspirations? Because you definitely have a story that mm-hmm. is unbelievable in terms of the travel that it has taken you. And we want to get into all of that. I mean, please, go ahead.
Yeah, when I first started doing music, or even had, like, the love and the passion for music was when I was around 9 years old. I was in third grade at the time. I think around this time, I believe 8 Mile had maybe just came out or recently came out, maybe like a year or so ago from when mm-hmm. I was in third grade. And I was actually watching that movie with my brother, and he wanted to battle rap with me. You know, my brother's 3 years older than me, so I'm like, okay. And he's like, you come up with something and I come up with something, and then you say what you wrote and I say what I wrote. You know, we'll do that all the time. So I'll write something and then he'll write something, and then he'll say what he say and I say what I say. And my brother never believed that I wrote what I was saying. He's like, you didn't write that, and da-da-da-da. Well, write another one then. And I'll be like, okay, well, shit, I'll write another one. And so I will write, and he still wouldn't believe me, or he'll, like, watch me write to make sure I'm really writing it. And then he was impressed by it, and then we was enrolled in the same school at the time. So we went to school, and then the next day he went around telling all his friends, like, y'all got to hear this rap that my sister wrote. And then from there, I kept doing the rap to family, friends, you know, cousins and everything. And I think I had a talent show at the school that year, and I ended up, a lot of people telling me, you should do your rap for the talent show. So that kind of got me into performing my music. So I did the rap for the talent show or whatever. And I was in third grade, and then after that, like, every year, you know, people would be like, are you going to be in the talent show again? And did you write something else? Or my neighbors or my mom would be like, what else did you write? So that kind of got me into, like, writing, you know, at a young age, because I always wanted to make sure I had a new rap for everybody. And then, I don't know, by the time I got into high school, I was, you know, I was still writing and everything, and I started, you know, getting into performing. And that got me the opportunity to do stuff for, you know, Bone Thugs and Warren G. I got to do some shows for MGK and P. Diddy, Omarion and Bow Wow, like 50 Cent. This was all in high school. You know, I was doing it on my own. I haven't manager or nothing. But it built my passion for it more. So by the time I, you know, graduated from high school, I had so much experience and knowledge on music, you know, and started recording in the actual studio and, you know, just meeting different people in the industry. It kind of, you know, it influenced me more. So when I got out of high school, I enrolled in college. And then from there on, you know, my dream for, you know, music and everything kind of grew. But it really just started from honestly just watching a movie and just having fun with my brother. And then from now on, you know, now I perform out of state. I have my song played on 102.3 FM, which is like a big radio out here in California. It's kind of like a Shade 45 if you was like in New York or whatever the case is. So,
oh, wow.
You know, it was a big opportunity for me, you know, out here to get my song played. And I got, when I did get it played on the radio, I didn't even release the song yet. I actually released it playing first on the radio. And this is all, you know, me doing it on my own, just, you know, coming out of high school and everything, just meeting different people, getting different opportunities. So definitely a lot of stuff has happened, and it's just crazy to always think back, like, man, all I was doing is just watching a movie, and, you know, it took me here. So I definitely still have a passion for it, and now it's like a job, but it's not a job that I consider a job. It's like fun work, so... I just, you know, I always love writing and recording and performing, so I'm just at a stage now to where I'm just trying to get it out there as far as I could, you know, different states and cities and around the world. But yeah, that's kind of how I started my little rapping career.
Well, one thing about it, when we, you know, watching 8 Mile, you know, of course released in 2002, you know, this is 3 years into Eminem's career, of which he pretty much in earnest when he's already like a major star. And one of the most understated points of 8 Mile was really how the battle rap scene is. You know, people, I would tell anybody, if you watch that movie, you really understand the nuance, you understand the tenacity, the determination, because you're watching what it really takes to survive on that scene where reputations are built and destroyed simultaneously, where the talent rises to the top and the cream is what's going to become champion. And in terms of how that ignited that passion for your writing acumen, in terms of how it would develop over time, obviously, you know, you built this, you evolved it, you kept evolving, because writing, in the words of the late, you know, Ralph Wiley, he said writing is an evolutionary process, of which you have definitely excelled at. When you look at how you were going forward in this endeavor of your creative art and performance, when you looked at all the people that you met along the way, what did you learn in the early stages of how the music industry works that the lessons you learned then you would take further and then into now with the people, of course, you know, of course, Derek, you know, Day, so many people. I mean, you work with, you know, Glass Malone as well, I believe. I mean, so you've met a lot of people on this journey.
Yeah, I met a lot of people.
Yeah, tell us about what you learned during that time and how it carried over, you know, from that time.
Just, like, from what I learned, like, just me, like, continuing music throughout my career.
Yeah, and the meeting the people along the way in terms of understanding how relationships, contacts, and the business actually works.
Yeah. I mean, for me, starting it when I was, like, younger, of course, you know, I didn't have any knowledge about any of, you know, how the music industry works and everything. But the more that I kept doing it and the more people I kept meeting, it's really, I mean, a lot of people say it's not about, you know, who you know and stuff, but it's most of maybe like 80% of it is who you know. Like, you can be talented and have everything down packed, but if you don't know nobody, it's kind of hard to like kind of get yourself out there. So once I started to kind of get to know people and, you know, get my relationships going with different people, it kind of worked, because I've built myself as an artist that doesn't just do songs for people for, you know, the clout or whatever the case is. I like to actually build something with the people that I'm working with, you know, because it's got me to a point to where I don't even really have to pay for no features or nothing that I'm doing, because the person that I am and the personality that I have, you know, especially being a female, like, I don't have to put my body out there, sell my body or nothing, just because of the personality that I have. A lot of people genuinely want to work with me. You know, I'm a serious artist when it comes to the studio and everything as well. And a lot of people look at that, especially, like, you know, I've met more so of, like, the older and, like, the OGs of the hip-hop opposed to, you know, the younger generation. Like, I know them, but my passion has always been to meet the people who've kind of been in the game longer. So just me being around them and everything, you know, it's more of a hustle and a motivation thing. For me personally, just getting to know and being around, you know, like I said, like Day One and everybody like that, it kind of, it's more like a motivation thing. Like, I see how in the studio with, like, younger artists, and it's sometimes it'd be like a playful thing, which is cool, because, I mean, it's supposed to be fun and everything. But then it's like me being around, like, you know, the older generation, I see, like, how they take their time with stuff and they actually think of stuff through and everything. So I just feel like everything is like a process and everything. It's more so like having fun with it, but also, like, trying to do something different and creating something that nobody's heard before. And it's definitely taught me a lot about the industry. Like, just
now,
not rushing a lot of stuff too, even like putting out projects and everything. Like, some that's another reason why I don't rush putting out nothing, because it ain't gonna get you nowhere. Just throwing it
out there. Now, one thing. Yeah, and one thing about it is that's the business of one thing, but also, too, you were born and raised in Watts, you know, and there are three hoods for those that really know Watts, you know, Imperial Court, Nickerson Gardens, and Jordan Downs, for those that really know mm-hmm. what it is out there, you know.
Yeah.
How did, you know, what was Watts like in terms of coming up, in terms of really understanding, you know, in terms of how it molded you to have that resilience, that drive, that determination, and that discipline?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of different just because it's something that I'm used to. So it's kind of hard to kind of describe a different lifestyle, because it's just something something I've been used to, you know. But it's definitely like, I mean, I definitely had, you know, some deaths in my family just being around the neighborhood that I'm in. But opposed to that, like, It's definitely gotten lighter from when I was younger, because it was a point to where I was younger, my mom didn't even want me going outside just because it was so much going on. Because I was born in 95, you know, which is a little bit after the Watts riots. And around that time, you know, they even had a thing out here, you know, called like 100 days, 100 nights, which is just, they were just killing 100
yeah.
people.
Ooh.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't matter what you, whatever. They didn't care. They didn't care at all. If you was in a neighborhood, they'll just come in your neighborhood and just kill anybody. It didn't matter no age, no sex or anything. Whoever it was, if they saw you, they were just killing you, you know. So that was a point in my time of growing up, like a childhood. I think I probably was maybe, I know I was in my teens, but I think I was maybe like 11, 12 or so when this was going on. And, They really didn't care. It's grandmas, grandpas, little kids, mothers, teenagers. It really didn't matter. Shirt colors was definitely a big thing out here. Even if you wear something like a white tee, it got even a point to where I have two older brothers. My mom, they'll put on like a muscle shirt, or they'll put on like a plain white tee. And my mom would be like, no, it's too much going on. Y'all can't wear that. You know, people that, you know, didn't live in, like, Watts or whatever at the time would probably be like, what, they can't wear a white shirt? Like, no. Because white shirts during the time of me growing up meant that you was affiliated in the game, regardless if it was red or blue or purple or orange. You know, it was just wearing a plain white tee, just period. You know, a lot of gangbangers will wear white tees to kind of camouflage that they was in the gang if they was in a different neighborhood. But just the white tee era, just in general, you get shot for that. So it was definitely just crazy little things. I mean, females, too. It's a, you know, females gangbang and shit, too. So they wasn't safe either. But yeah, it was just like, you know, shit like that, that growing up, that would just be crazy, this experience. And so, you know, once it kind of died down, you can kind of see, I mean, the streets are a little cleaner. You know, you don't see as many homeless people as I used to see when I was younger. So just me personally, just living in Watts at the time, I could see the change. It's not as bad as it used to be. It's not as great, you know, but it's definitely a process. Definitely when I was younger, it was crazy over here for sure. It was definitely crazy. Man. So.
And when we, of course, we got a shout out of man Snoopy Blue representing ECC 97. I mean, of course, you know, for those that really know, I mean, you got to shout out Eastside 115, 118, Eastside, mm-hmm. you know, 104, 108, Fudgetown 105, 107, GC 96, 97. I mean, Homestown 97, Neighborhood Crip 112. I mean, PJ Watts, 10 Lane. You know, of course, I mean, Avalon, you know, Bounty Hunters. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's real. You know, I mean, so it's something where, in terms of hip hop music, of course, you know, and you know, on the West Coast, Watts has always carried its own level of respect in terms of the traditions there. You know, in terms of, I mean, the street pedigree, like you said, is on its own merits of realness. That you say Watts, and it's like a lot of niggas in L.A.
Even me being like, a female, like, when I was around, like, 18, 19, you know, I would have, you know, guys talk to me. I could be maybe somewhere on the west side, like, at the mall, at, like, Del Amo Mall or Culver City Mall or something, and a guy would come talk to me, like, yeah, you know, like, what area are you staying? I'd be like, I stay in Watts. He'd be like, ooh, Watts. Oh, no, I don't know about that. And I'd be like, what? Like... You know, and they'll just be like, oh, I know about the white girls. And I'll be like, you know, everybody different, but, like, just, like, any, like, male, not like that, but when a male hears that a girl from Watts, it's like a turnoff. You know, they'd be like, you know, so. But they'll look at me and be like, you don't look like you from Watts. But when you say it, it's like, oh, shit. Even, like, Compton, it's like, oh, okay. Compton's a little bit more, like, organic a little bit, like, oh, okay, you from, but when you say Watts, they like, what? Oh, like, you ghetto as hell, like, yeah.
Well, look, all the way in VA, because King is in North Carolina, I'm in Virginia, so we always heard, you know, what y'all was saying all the way out there. When we first got wind about Watts, we was, like, thinking before it became a thing, Watts, and then followed by with the shit. So we was like,
yeah. They hear Watts and they be like, what? Like, oh,
nah. Bullshit. But one thing about it is, but it's also, you know, that realness that elevated y'all to a hierarchy of respect in the game. When you look at it, when you moved on in the game in terms of really, because the hardest thing, especially being a woman in the business of music, is not only getting your music out there at times, but also finding a team that looks at you as an equal in terms of dealing with you off of your talent, your charisma, your personality, and not the physicality of putting you on that casting couch, you know, to get put on. When you hooked up with Day One, one of the most preeminent, phenomenal pyrotechnic on the production, and, of course, shout out to Derek, his manager, I mean, the whole team. How did you link up with them in terms of where that relationship came?
The link up with Derek, which is my manager right now, he will always, messaged me on Instagram, and I just kept ignoring it. I'm like, who is this man that keep you know, I don't really respond to my messages on Instagram at all. And I think I had a video shoot one day, and I think he like commented on it. And like the video shoot that I had, it was like I didn't have a manager at this time, but it was like a real exclusive like video shoot. Like I had, it was like Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces, and you know, that was the type of video shoot that I had. Yeah, it was like a big video shoot. So I was just talking mess on Instagram, like, you know, doing this without a manager, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff or whatever. And Derek had commented on it. He's like, I could do better for you though, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who is, I kept seeing his name. I'm like, who is this dude that keeps commenting on my stuff? So okay. I had clicked inside the message, and like I had seen like how many times he was just messaging. You could just tell that he was like interested, like he was just very eager to like want to work, and like he was commenting on everything. But I don't really check my messages like that. So when I like really opened it, I'm like, dang, like this dude kind of been following me for a minute. He's like, you know, he's been staying interactive with me even though I haven't been responding. And I'm like, you know, he's, like, been hitting me up. So I kind of, like, scrolled on his page a little bit, and I kind of seen that he had, like, a studio or whatever and everything that was going on. And honestly, I think I had a song that I was trying to record, and Derek was like, if you need, like, studio time or anything, let me know. You can come down to the studio, and I'll let your first day be free, you know, da da da. And I'm like, well, I do got a song to record, but let me respond back to him, you know. So I ended up responding back to him, like, hey, you know, da da da, or whatever. So I actually went down to the studio, like, sometime that week, you know, to record the song that I had. And it was, like, some other engineers and producers that was there. And it was like, oh, like, this is dope. Like, I ain't heard a female rap like this in a long time, blah, 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 or whatever. And, you know, Derek was like, you know, yeah, I've been reaching out. I've been running to work with you. And I'm like, yeah, you know. I said, I just been trying to do it on my own, this and that. And he was like, yeah. He's like, well, you know, you got to just trust in somebody that's going to really, like, you know, put in the effort for you. He was like, I get to, you know, doing it on your own sometimes. You know, that's, like, the way that people want to go. He's like, but I could do a lot of things for you. He's like, you know, I'd say, he's like, just let me be a month. And let me just show you what I could do all for you, you know, this and that and that. So, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'll see. He was like, you know, you don't have to sign nothing or anything right now. He's like, I just want to show you what I could do for you in a month. And if you like it, then we could talk business, you know, whatever. So I was like, all right, well, I guess we'll see. Like, I'll give you a month or whatever. And I think within that month, like, I had recorded in, like, videos and songs and just in general, and just meeting different other people in the industry that I haven't met. This all in a month, I got the opportunity to, you know, to do that. And, you know, I have to pay for studio sessions or anything. So he was just like, you know, like, yeah, I want to do this, I want to do that. And, you know, he was letting it happen. He was making it happen all in this month. And I'm like, well, dang, like, this guy really, you know, about what he's talking about. And, it got to a point, too, like, the engineers in our studio, they all got, you know, busy with other work. So I didn't have an engineer at the time, but I did want to continue working with Derek. So Derek was like, you know, well, I'm trying to find you an engineer. I know I got some people that, you know, will want to work. I'm going to show them your music and everything. And then that's how we got across day one. I guess Derek and day one already had, you know, the familiarities or whatever with each other. They was already cool with each other and everything. So he contacted day one. He showed day one my music. And day one wanted to meet with me. And day one had me come to one of his studios that he had. I think it was like in Hollywood or something. And I kind of went. And day one just, I didn't record anything with day one. He had a session going on. He just wanted me to sit in his session and kind of watch, you know, how he works or whatever. And, you know, Derek was like, you know, report back to me. And if you like this dude, I'm going to make it happen for you. And I was like, okay. So I kind of seen how day one was working with the artist that he had. You know, I seen how he was taking his time with him. He was being opinionated and, you know, criticizing at the same time. And but he was being, you know, positive about everything that he was doing. He was giving his advice. He was kind of like, you know, working his own type of way, but also listening to the artist and everything. And a lot of artists don't get that. You know, sometimes people just be about their money. They don't really care, you know, what you doing. And I could tell that day one's passion for, you know, music was different. he was taking his time. He was actually trying to make sure that the artist was, you know, coming with the best effort that they had. Like, if you messed up, he'll stop, you know, do it over. Or, you know what I'm saying, like, oh, what word was that that you were trying to say? He'll correct you and everything. You know, most of the times now producers or, you know, engineers, whatever you say, however you record it, they'll be like, all right, cool, you know, you ready for the next part? They'll just, you know, fly through it because at this point they just care about the money, don't care about the song or how you sound or anything. But I kind of seen that day one was like, he was like, the guy was like, oh, he was working with a dude, like, the dude was like, oh, I like it. They was like, oh, I don't really like it. Let's see if you do it again. I'll save the one that you just did. Let's record it one more time. And then the guy recorded it one more time. He's like, oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. I like this one better. So I was like, you know what, I think I want to work with him because I think we'll come up with some good stuff. So that's how I got across day one. And me and day one kind of been working with each other for, you know, over a year now. And we recorded a lot, like, we recorded songs. Like, I got a whole album worth of songs I could just put out with day one. And, you know, mixtapes, I got features. He gave me the opportunity to meet, like, Corrupt and, you know, some of the Dog Pound people. I've met Exhibit, you know, in his studio sessions and stuff. So they definitely been, you know, bringing me around and kind of, like, schooling me on, like, the ins and outs of the music industry. So it was definitely, I'm glad that I made the choice that I made, you know, to be around them. I definitely see them exceeding as well, you know, on their own. So it's like a power team at this point because it's not, they don't have no other female, you feel me, that is technically like under their wing as much as I am. So it's definitely a dope thing to kind of be a part of.
Definitely.
Yeah,
we
got
to shout out Exhibit, too. Yeah.
So good to have a manager that actually manages.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, let the manager, you know, the manager is supposed to manage, you know, handle the business of the artist instead of being out there talking a whole lot, getting into it with people that may just pull up on his door when he least expects it, you know, messing up the credibility with his artist. You know, that's not what a manager does. And of course, we got Shout Exhibit, you know, who called up on the show last year. We had Rashidi from Hip Hop Uncovered on, you know, shout out to X, you know, for coming in on though. Now, you know, Ivy, you gotta tell us about, you know, you and Dave making the trip to Montana to do the recording because that's like
correct.
That was dope.
For one, I've never been to Montana before, like ever, so. When I went out there, I was like, oh, Lord, I'm about to be around all these white people. They about to be racist. You know, that was the thought. I'm telling you. That was the thought I was thinking. I was like, oh, man, day one got me going through some crazy stuff, man. But it was dope. Like, when we got out there, you know, I got to meet, you know, they was already in the studio when I got there. So I got to meet them or whatever. And Corrupt is, like, really cool. Like, he's really funny. You never know it unless you be around him. But Corrupt is a funny dude. Like, he just cracked jokes, and you can just tell he's just a happy person. And just, like, you know, all just off top, like, him just meeting me, you know, he was very introductive. He was like, hey, how you doing? And he was like, you coming on, I'm going on stage, you coming with me? And I'm like, all right, well, shoot, let's go then, you know, like, you know. So he was real cool. Like, yeah, I'm telling you, Corrupt was like, you coming on stage with me? And I'm like, yeah, like, I mean, I guess, like, shit. But, you know, this is just his first time meeting me, too. So it was definitely a fun show. It was definitely fun. I got a lot of followers and stuff, too. You wouldn't even expect it, but some white people, they was loving hip-hop out there. They was going crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, it was crazy. I'm telling you. But, you know, they always say, huh?
Was it kind of like a culture shock at first?
Yeah, definitely was. And I was like, because at first I'm like, man, I seen some black people too, which was surprising. But I was just like, I don't know who about to come to this show. Like, I was like, they don't listen to no dang hip-hop out here. But no, they came, they showed out and everything. And they was really cool. Like, I have so many fans and stuff buy me shots. I was like, you know what, I can't take no more shots with y'all. I'm like, thank y'all, though. But, you know, they was cool. It was a fun trip.
Yeah.
The people,
you know,
the energy there was good. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because we got to shout out our boy Sal Diddy, you know, the incredible Italian from Long Beach, you know, and me and Sal were talking about a show. This is the first show he had done in Colorado. I asked him how it was. He was like, very white.
Mm-hmm.
But they were rocking with him. And, I mean, the thing about it, the beautiful thing about the culture of hip-hop is that it's something that, while it was created by black and brown people, it is shared by people all over the world. It is not exclusive to just us. We are the creators, but however, it is all-encompassing. You have Asian rappers. You have, you know,
mm-hmm.
German rappers. You have African rappers. You know, you have Russian rappers. You know, you have Middle Eastern rappers. You know, so... And the one thing... Exactly. And the thing is, no matter what color you are, as long as you can appreciate the authenticity, you know, what it takes to really be part of it, to have an appreciation and to be for the culture in terms of watering it with the wisdom, the compassion, and the care that cultivates and grows it, as opposed to being a vulture that picks apart the dead carcass, you know, stripping it of creativity. As long as you understand that you are adding to it and building and not destroying and, you know, exterminating, that is what it is all about.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at some of the artists out there and watch that have really made it, shout out to J-Rock, of course, for what he got with his Grammy, he really, that was huge. Shout out TDE, you know, shout out to Absol, Kendrick, you know, whole Top Dog Entertainment, you know, Anthony Tiffler, the whole crew. I mean, SZA, everybody out there. What are your feelings about West Coast rap right now in terms of how it's moving? Kendrick, of course, just came back with a Heat Rock.
Crazy.
You know,
I'm like the videographer, the editor for that video. That was crazy. I'm like, you wouldn't even tell that it was an edit.
Yeah, all them different faces that he used. And, you know,
that was crazy.
And it's wild because Kendrick, you know, said some years back, of course, you know, he's married, you know, has children now. You know, it's like he wanted to take time off and raise a family, but it's like when that itch comes back, you know, it's like, you know what I say, I can't leave rap alone. The game needs me. And he came back with a Heat Rock. When you look at other artists, G Perico, you know, G Perico, AD, Cam and China, Kamaya, YG, Mitchy Slick, Pat Man the Gunman, Jay Stone, oh my God. I mean, the new joint he dropped. Shout out to 60s, man. Shout out to Normandy, Florence, that whole side, man. I mean, you know, Crench, the whole
show. It's all about support,
Crench,
too. Yeah, it's all about support and everything as well.
Absolutely. You know, what's it like just watching all of you just bubble in terms of really, 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 you know, really establishing, you know, of course, we can't forget Honest Long, you know, daughter of the legendary Cocaine, Jerry Long. I mean, to watch all of you with that young California, that new California wave, that marvelous movement, how does it feel to be part of that?
It's definitely a dope and motivating experience because I know so many of them. So it's definitely a good experience to be around. I even know one of the people that I used to even record with, I believe maybe beginning of this year or end of last year, they had just got signed to Roc Nation, which is crazy because I'm like, we used to be in the studio with each other all the time. So, you know, it's definitely motivating to see it happen. And you can just tell, like, how can I say? Like, just personally from my experience, no one has really, like, changed. You know what I'm saying? You still see them around. I can go message Jay Stone or whoever right now, and they still going to respond to me. You feel me? So it's definitely good to see that, you know, the love and everything is still there, you know, because some people you get your name going and then they start changing up and everything. But L.A. is definitely culture-based. You know, at first it wouldn't that seem like that, because there's so many cultures in L.A., you know, so many people come out here to stretch and expand their careers. So our culture is in, like, as, like, New York, you know what I'm saying? Like, just it's so many different nationalities and stuff out here now. But as, like, when it comes to, like, the hip-hop culture, it's, you can tell it's familiar out here. Everyone kind of knows everybody out here. If you don't know them, you've seen them around. If you've seen them around, you know somebody else that knows them. So it's definitely cool to kind of, you know, see everybody still moving around, even though, you know, after the Lil Nipsey stuff happened, that kind of brought everybody together a little bit more, I'll say, because now that kind of got different hoods and different, you know, gangs and stuff to kind of collaborate on music. It's not really how it used to be, just the Bloods with the Bloods and the Crips with the Crips or whatever. You definitely have, like, a mixed variety going on now with, like, music. People are putting business before personal. So it's definitely it's a dope thing to be around, to actually see it happen in front of my own eyes. But I was like, you know, just from me saying, from me telling y'all growing up, you wearing the color and they shooting you for that. So for that, from being in that area to seeing it now, to, like, how people could just get up, do songs, or, you know, be in the same event or concert or parties, it's definitely crazy to see it happen.
Yeah. When you look at California in general, when we look at the history of it, from Compton to Inglewood to Watts, it's like a big fraternity, because you're seeing, like you said, a lot of these people that came up together. It's like you're watching their success rise as, you know, you all grow. I mean, we look at the situation, you know, with Nipsey, God rest his soul, you know, we were supportive of his movement years ago. You know, we were going to get him on the show. You know, unfortunately, he was killed before we had a chance to really get that together. But to watch a lot of them come up, I mean, you know, like I said, even all the way in Virginia, I got a deep, deep love for what y'all do on the West. I mean, watching, you know, Compton AV, you know, really come up. I mean, of course, what he's doing with his label, Rich Off Rap. I mean, G.I. Joe, we had him on last year. Shout out to Rebecca Kitchen, his manager. you know, like I said, Patman, I mean, Cam and Chyna from Inglewood, oh my God, the most tremendously talented twin sisters out there. I mean, you all really, really, really have a hustle. I mean, taking it to up in Northern California, you know, you're seeing what Mozzie's doing out in Sacramento, you know, what he did, you know, you're watching, you know, Kamaya in Oakland. I mean, E-40 is the godfather, you know, of course, of Too Short and the late, great Mac Dre. What is it about the West Coast that y'all just have this endless excellence that keeps expanding and exhilarating? How do y'all keep that big West Coast energy?
I think it's really just based off the support, honestly, because the support out here is kind of like in the middle. Sometimes it depends, honestly, because you'll see most people that support you will be people that you don't know, which is like a very common thing. You know,
right.
the people that know you support you lesser than the people that don't know you. You know, and since in
right.
L.A., everybody knows each other, it's just harder to not listen to somebody's music because everybody knows everybody in L.A. So if somebody come out with a song, regardless if you want to hear it or not, somebody else can be playing it, you know. So the support out here is definitely good, I would say. It's easy to get music out here as long as you're knowing these people, you know, because, like I said, L.A. is small. You know, most of the artists out here, most of the artists all know the artists. Even though we might, not all the fans might know all the fans, but all the L.A. artists either have heard or seen other L.A. artists before. I was just in the studio session today, and I wasn't even part of the song, but I was just coming because, you know, I knew two of the people on the song. And the third person that was there was like, "You Ivory, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." They was like, "Oh, you got a song with da da da, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Oh, yeah, I kind of seen that." But it's like we've never met each other before, but we still know about each other just because we we our circle is so small in LA, it's like everybody kind of know everybody. So I think it's just all based on like the support and the DJs as well. You know, DJs, the DJs definitely play a lot of the LA artist music. You cannot be, you'll be unsigned out here and they playing your song on the radio. It don't matter. As long as if you got a hot song and you got people around LA is playing it, and they playing it on the radio too. So it's definitely a way to get your music out there faster. The radio stations out here will definitely play your music. If it's going and it's booming, they playing your song on the radio. Like I said, my song was played on the radio, and my song wasn't even out yet. So it's all about the support within the community. I'm sorry?
How did you feel when you first heard it on the radio? What was that feeling?
Oh, I was all in the parking lot screaming and jumping. I was screaming and jumping.
Like
I was by myself, too.
Like 6-4 low.
Yeah, I was by myself.
Yeah, I'm with it.
Yeah, I know that. It was some people. I seen some people looking at me, but at that time, I didn't care. But yeah, I was by myself, so they looking like, why is this girl in the parking lot? I think it was late too. The DJ that played it, he had a late session from like 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. I don't remember what time it was, but it was definitely between 10 p.m. and 12 a.m. And I'm outside in the parking lot screaming, so I know they was looking like, what is wrong with this girl? But yeah, I was definitely excited. I had fun by myself. So it was a cool experience. I had fun.
But one thing too, Ivory, about what you said about getting you know to know a lot of the OGs out there. I mean, of course, we got to shout out Chilly Chill. You know,
yeah.
I've seen, of course, JD from the Lynch Mob. Welcome home again. I mean, of course, Kenya Ware, Big U,
mm-hmm.
Big Duck. So many that really
mm-hmm.
behind the
yeah,
scenes.
Yeah, I ain't going to say too much, but me and Chilly Chill definitely got some stuff coming.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, because we've had Chilly Chill on. You know, we've had him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we definitely got some stuff coming.
Oh, man.
It might be one song. Yeah. It might be 5 songs. It might be a music video. I don't know. There's some stuff coming up.
Now, how did you and Chilly Chill link up?
Through my manager.
Okay.
That's one of his good people. That my manager had an event and he kind of introduced us and Chilly Chill had followed me and he kind of ran across my music and everything. And I think from there on, him and my manager probably had like their side conversations, you know, about like collaborating and doing stuff together or whatever. So I think, you know, they got their own little stuff happening that they told me, you know, in my ear about what's going on. So I'm like, all right, well, let's do it.
Now, what do artists have to understand, Ivory, about what this entails in terms of the time, the discipline, the dedication that it takes? We've interviewed so many artists during the 8 years we've been, you know, doing this, of Off the Cuff. And a lot of artists, you know, we talk to on air, off air. We're journalists. We can
mm-hmm.
safely say that after almost 10 years of doing this. What do artists have to understand about what this business really is and how at times it may not work out or it just may take longer than what they expected to become successful or to even be heard?
Yeah, it definitely doesn't happen overnight. It's definitely not, I mean, a lot of people might look at this as something like easy, you know, like, oh, you just write a song to a beat and then put it out. But it's more to it. It's the ambition and the drive that you're putting on. It's the energy that you're putting on. It's how you're putting out your stuff, how you're promoting it, who you're sending it to, how you're presenting yourself even on social media and when you're, you know, in reality, you know, just walking and stuff. It's how you present yourself, how you act, how you talk, if you're attracting a certain audience that you want to attract, you're building a character, you know, not even building a character like as if you're not being yourself, but it's definitely an image that you have to go by, and whatever image it is that you want to go by is what you got to stick by. So a lot of that comes with the music, even though that has nothing to do with music. Like, oh, who I am, why does that have to do with, you know, the type of music I'm putting out? A lot of people care about that now. It's not how it used to be back then. You just put out a song. If they like it, they like it. Now it's like they got to like the song. They got to like you. They want to see what you got on, how your hair is, how you walk, how you talk, how you dress, your weight size, your skin color, if you got tattoos, if you don't. All that comes with now of being an artist. So most of the stuff is who you are and your music, but it's also most of the time and everything now was like an image thing that I would personally say from, you know, just experience from what I see. It's more of like an image thing, and it's so easy. Like, they don't really care nowadays. It's more so you getting yourself out there quicker by just going on a song and just talking about whatever and then dressing a certain way, opposed to actually making a song that's meaningful and talking about something. People more towards gravitate towards the fun rather than the serious when it comes to the music, which is, you know, that's just how people are just nowadays, just in general. So it's kind of like a game thing. Like, you gotta know how to now be versatile when it comes to music, so that way you can show, like, if you do want to do a serious song or a fun song, whatever, you're able to do that. Because sticking to one type of sound now, too, is something that you can't do. You got to be versatile when it comes to music. You can't just have one sound, because how the generation is and how music works now, the sounds and the way switches up quick. So you definitely have to be ready to not switch your style up, but you got to be ready to, you know, you might have to do a song that might sound like this or whatever the case is, but it's like a maintenance thing. Like, you gotta keep up what was going on, or if not, you're gonna get left behind.
Yeah, when you look at it, it is so in flux. King, you know, myself, we talk about this off air. We talk about this on air about how, because of social media, it has accelerated the element of accessibility. People are now, back in the day, I mean, when you shot a video or, I mean, even did a song back in the day, there was like, really, you had to move mountains. You had to know somebody. I mean, just to get in the studio or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, and even doing a video, like, you really had to get the video cameras together. Like, you really had to have a camera crew to, like, really just try to get it. And now, you know, with cell phone technology, you know, video camera technology, I mean, you can get a good camera for $5,000 to $10,000. I mean, you got the software, you can do it on computers now. One thing too, which cannot be overstated, Ivory, we wanted to ask you about whether we have the elements of a lot of dudes, you know, trying to play the street role, trying to claim colors. Now, you're from Watts, and Watts is what the shit, as we said earlier. It's well established, the reputation.
Mm-hmm.
What do artists have to understand about involving themselves in the street life or something they did not grow up in or something that they really do not understand the full depth of seriousness with?
Mm-hmm. Do you guys know who Draco the Ruler is?
Rest in peace, Draco. Yeah. We that was
okay. Well, Draco the Ruler, he was he's a artist that was
Stinky,
in California.
Yeah,
and Yeah, his name is Draco the Ruler, but he's an artist in California. He's not affiliated with gangs or anything at all. He's not he's not a gangbanger or anything. But he got killed at a festival that we had out here. It was a festival that Snoop Dogg actually had, I believe.
Yeah,
he got killed from a gang, you know, but he wasn't affiliated. A lot of Draco's songs would have to do with, you know, doing this or doing that to an op, or, you know what I'm saying? So when you talk about it, they expect you to live it, regardless if you're affiliated or not, you know. That's what a lot of artists, you know, mistake out here. I don't know. I think it was Ruby Rose is also an artist from out here. She's not affiliated, but she talks about being a blood and throwing up, you know, blood signs. when it comes to her music. And she said the reason she does that is because she feels like it's cute and it's attractive, and she likes the image that, you know, it is for her. So, you know, like I was saying earlier, you have to create an image. And some people, they see it as like a like a costume, like, oh, I'm not serious. I'm just, like, you know, making music about it and this and that and that. And some people are fine with that. You know, some people don't care where you're from or what you dress or what you look like or, you know, what sign you throw up, you know. But then you have the other side that do care and that retaliates when it comes to a certain gang or, you know, because some people have past and histories with gangs and stuff. They might have lost a mom or a dad or a family member. So everybody takes everything different, you know, opinions, like the opinions in the world is different. Like, I might feel a way, you might not feel a way. But at the end of the day, somebody going to feel some type of way. So definitely when it comes to, like, music and choosing to be a part of the gang and then you ain't and you just putting up a front, you're going to definitely get some people that's going to come and test you. And when they test you, there's no thought or
there's no hesitation in terms of they're trying to in terms
yeah,
of how
like
they're
they,
gonna have
you don't
their
know
validation.
What they about to do.
Right.
Yeah, you don't know what
right.
they about
yeah.
to do. You're not gonna have time to be like, oh, I was just playing it, like, it's too late, you know, because you done set it on this song and this and that. So they, you know, it all depends too. It's like, you can't be lying and saying that you this and you that, but then when somebody confronts you about it, you're not all of a sudden. So.
Yeah.
I personally don't think it's a smart move. A lot of people do it in their songs, though. But it's fine to say if you this and you that, but once you start naming hoods and claiming different genres of hoods, like, oh, I'm this and I'm that, then that's where it gets to a point to the it get a little serious. Like, you're like, hold on, wait.
Yeah, man, look. Like, you look like you can't be from Compton yelling 159 all the time. And for those
yeah,
that have heard that, y'all know
Compton,
what it means when I said that.
Yeah.
You can't be quick. You know,
you say
look,
you from Compton, and you say you from a hood, and the people that's in that
yeah,
hood
look.
Like, I don't need this nigga. Like, hold
look,
on.
You can't,
like,
look,
they never seen him
you can't
before.
Be saying, you can't be saying F or die, you know, for those that understand Front Street. You know what I'm saying? Y'all don't,
mm-hmm.
look, y'all don't be out there, you know, throwing up, you know, staying on Piru when you're not really from there. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
it's serious.
Because at the same time, like, whatever gang or whatever it is that you're trying to represent, at the end of the day, it's one person in the world that don't like that gang. So you got to be ready for when that one person comes and try to retaliate towards you.
And that's real
right
now. I mean, like you said, that's wisdom. You know, there's always going to be that one person that, like, really doesn't like that set that you talk about. And they're like,
mm-hmm.
oh, they, so, okay, so we about to, all right, so they automatically op off of GP alone that I don't
right.
like. Right,
they taking it serious. Even though you playing, they don't know that. Even if they do know that,
yeah.
they still don't like you.
Yeah. And then they, definitely, look, Ivory, this has been incredible. I mean, the jewels that you done dropped, we got a little bit of time left. Who would you like to work with down the line as your career continues?
Yeah, that's a long list.
Name a few and then
I definitely want to work with Missy Elliott. I don't even know if she's still doing music right now, but I always have gravitated towards Missy Elliott just because of how different she is and
we love
how
her
wide
at the
game her.
We love
yeah,
her.
She just, I just she feel like Missy could go in any type of field. I just feel like she's just so open and just versatile when it comes to music, and she's definitely set a lot of a lot of pinpoints for other artists that I've seen, you know, gravitate. Lauryn Hill as well. When we go into, like, this generation, there's a lot of, like, unsigned artists, too, that I want to work with out here. I definitely have some stuff with, like, Jay Stone that I'm trying to get going. He's just a busy guy. But Jay Stone is definitely a person that I want to work with, too.
On the move.
You said
do
what?
It for the hood.
He be on the move.
Yeah, I just feel like, cause and Jay Stone hasn't done a song with a female yet, so I just feel like it's only right, you know. So, like, yeah, I'll be looking at stuff like that. Like, I like to do stuff like first time type of stuff. I'm like, Jay Stone ain't did no song with no female yet, so that would stand out, you know. Definitely want that to happen. It's a lot of artists. It's a long list. So
definitely, yeah.
I'm always open up for like collaborations and stuff, you know. As long as there's some type of connection there, I don't like really just working with people just to work with them. I like to, you know, work with them for reasons opposed to the clout and the publicity.
Right. Well, you don't do that cloud chasing creativity. It has to be organic.
Yeah, I don't
cloud
really like that.
It ain't counterfeit. Yeah. It's got to be real chemistry. You don't do cloud
mm-hmm.
chasing on the counterfeit.
The song definitely comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the song comes out way better when y'all have chemistry, opposed to just doing it just to do it. You know, because you got to think, if you put two strangers in the room, their song might be good. You know, I'm not saying it's not, but if you put in two people who has good chemistry and they able to balance and work with each other and be more creative with each other, and theirs is going to come out better than it is two people who don't know each other. Even though they don't know, they might have different, you know, abilities and crafts that they could put together, but opposed to somebody that already know each other, they know how far to stretch you and how far not to, and they could, you know, I just feel like it's more creativity that can get built with somebody who you kind of worked with before, and you got to, y'all connect on a different level. So that's what I kind of gravitate towards.
Definitely. Before we go, Ivory, we got to send, of course, because this is the West Coast, we got to send once again a very melancholy, you know, RIP, of course, to the legend Jewel Capel, the first lady of Death Row, the super songstress, rest in peace legend. God, I mean, such a loss for the culture. But the legacy that, you know, of course, she was part of that musical marvelousness that has laid down. Y'all are following in tradition and are doing so many beautiful things with it, carrying it on, you know, with that Westward
mm-hmm.
flag. Keep throwing up them dubs. I mean, Ivory, let everybody know where they can find you online, on YouTube, you know, everywhere. Plug it.
If you go on any platform, if you type in Ivory the Goddess, the as the letter D and A, you type in Ivory the Goddess, everything will pop up. Or if you type it in on Google, it should pop up as well. When it comes to like social media, you guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter and everything at IVERYYY. You type that in, it should pop up and everything. But yeah, really just typing in Ivory the Goddess or IVERYYY. On any type of platform, it should pop up for y'all.
Definitely, and look, you keep up that dynamite deity energy, Ivory the Goddess. Look, keep it up. Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean,
yeah. On that note, we're coming up out of here. We definitely appreciate you for joining us. Big shout out to Pittsburgh Pat for chopping it up with us and bringing M11 on. And we out.
Peace.
All right, thank y'all.
And thank you.